Welcome to This Week on the Grappling Rewind podcast. In this week's show, we are going to recap ADXC, their inaugural event. We are going to talk a little about Polaris happening in 2 weeks, talk a little about Toro Cup and Fight to Win, and also talk a lot about news that's happening. We are 1 week off, or 1 week post, the ADCC East Coast Trials. As always in the show, I'm your host, Maine, to my co-host,
Josh.
How you doing, Josh?
Good.
Doing pretty good as well for me. Midday show for me is always a little weird. Let's get into news before we get into anything else. We have some fun announcements for the UFC Invitational. They have a card announced this week, the UFC Invitational 5, happening December 9th, main evented by Gordon Ryan versus Mason Fowler.
I mean, exciting, but Gordon buy whatever he wants.
Probably. Again, I like Mason's game.
I think Mason's a great grappler, but
yeah.
Gordon buy whatever he wants.
Yeah, look at the Gaudio is also a great grappler, and like pick the guy, the last couple of guys that Gordon's went against.
When Gordon went against Nicky Rod.
Yeah.
How was that?
In overtime.
Okay.
So the interesting thing about UFC Invitational is that if Fowler makes it through regulation, which it's very possible he does, think about all the SUG matches that Fowler had where it's like he gets your back, and he finished Craig Jones in overtime with like that crank on the back like once or twice. Like Fowler is uniquely very, very good at EBI rules. And I think at least even in the pre-show here, I had kind of forgotten all of those SUG matches that Fowler had where it's like we didn't count Fowler out. He was always in the mix. He's always been in the mix. You don't go to ADCC and win trials and do all that while being one of the best grapplers in the world. But we don't see him in EBI style rules, in those overtime rules, as frequently anymore because he's at that top level. I am kind of curious. I think, again, Gordon probably is able to fend him off, but how big is Fowler sitting at? Do we know? Do you remember how big Fowler is? Was he 88 or 99?
99.
Okay.
Under, I think.
He got bigger.
He's
going to have, I think he's still going to be on the smaller side versus Gordon.
I think they'll be roughly the same weight, give or take.
218, 220?
Yeah,
somewhere right around there. Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious about this match mostly for like the overtime. Actually, weirdly enough, for the overtime aspect, if Gordon isn't able to put Fowler away, because Fowler has, you know, Fowler's world class. If he can shell, or if he can like put up offense and kind of keep Gordon. Gordon tends to like to cook guys more slowly, usually, especially in these kind of super fight events. We've seen him kind of run through folks when he was at ADCC in his division. But I'm more curious about this matchup than other matchups. I still kind of want to see him against Duarte. That is really the match I want to see, the rematch I want to see. We just saw the match with Gaudio. That was his other toughest match in IBJJF, was kind of Duarte, 5 years ago. We talked about it. You and I previewed the Gordon Ryan versus Patrick Gaudio match a couple of weeks ago. And that was, I think you said it best, he's not the same dude anymore. It's not going to look anything like the first match, and it didn't.
No, he absolutely smothered him.
That's a match I want to see
the entire time. So, yeah. But again, this is a little bit better just because of the fact that there isn't like 30 minutes to do anything.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's
a little
just
shorter of a 15 minute, probably. Maybe 20 for a main event.
10 minutes, I'm hoping.
I like
the overtime rules.
I like 10 the minutes. 10 minutes.
Dude, get it done quicker. Don't like, we understand that you can cook people, we get it. Finish him faster. Flash fry him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Also on that card, we have... this is Nick Mirgali. It threw me off. I've never seen him titled as Nick. I'm looking at the UFC Invitational poster here.
That's why, because they didn't want to put Nicholas.
It says Nick Mirgali versus Felipe Pena. It's just funny. They put the N on Pena. I don't think the Enya is there. Because I think the name is Portuguese, not Spanish. So I think it's funny. It's an oddity to the name. But yeah, Nick Mirgali. That is an interesting matchup.
Nick Mirgali's going to win.
He just beat Duarte.
I think that has nothing to do with it. I think we're going to see something again and... Okay, hold on. I'm going to channel this really quick and then...
We're going to preview this all again later.
He's going to hang on his head.
Yeah.
Right? And then he's going to duck under, and he's going to take his back, and he's going to lose his back, and he's going to finish from mount.
Like an arm triangle?
Nope, arm bar.
All right.
He's going to arm bar him from mount.
Calling it, what are we?
Two months
out. Two months out?
Yeah.
Right. So that's the news that announced this week. We also have Kalyna Krivar got announced for a matchup versus Julia Meili. I think that's on Who's Number One. That's not on... that's announced for Who's Number One. That card has had a couple of changes as well. Lovato's going against Pedro Mourinho. I think that got announced during the last card. Still really excited about that.
I just realized something. Mm-hmm. Just because you brought it up. It's on November 30th. So like a few days later. So Gordon's on Who's Number One on that one as well. Against Hulk,
and then a week later on UFC.
Like a week and some change later, oh, it's a Thursday card, son of a bitch.
Yeah, these number one cards are Thursday. They kind of,
God, I hate that they do that.
It's not great, but regardless. So that's all I got for that. Basically, big announcements for cards. Other news this week: we have Polaris in 2 weeks. I for some reason we're going to preview it this week. Those matchups look great. We'll probably talk about that at the end of the show really quickly because you may not be on when we preview it, and I want to get your thoughts on some stuff. We also have, we have two pieces of bad news, and then we'll get into more kind of more exciting stuff, good rash guards. Jiu-Jitsu Times got hacked, and they're going on an indefinite hiatus. Jiu-Jitsu Times. They have been a pretty big staple in the Jiu-Jitsu news space for what?
A while.
15 years, probably more almost.
I don't know.
Very, very long time. They are the O-est of G's when it comes to, I mean, going back and looking for any sort of old news. They were like the only ones around for a very long time. English news-based websites. So it's unfortunate that they got hacked. Again, I hope that they're able to recover their archives. Their archives are, I mean, even to this day, occasionally when I'm looking for old matches, the Jiu-Jitsu Times articles
will be
the only one that like even has any information. But here's a match that there's no video anymore, and somebody Jiu-Jitsu Times would have had someone at the event that did some sort of coverage and write up, and that's the only remaining like evidence of that match that took place. So unfortunate that happened to them. Really hope that they're able to recover it all because they are, you know, a huge pillar of the sports reporting community that Grappling Rewind is kind of part of now. We've been a part of for a while now. Yeah. It's always weird to kind of put us into the same realm as the juggernauts like Jiu-Jitsu Times.
We got news.
We do have news. We break news sometimes. Also, an unfortunate news. A guy that I know, not know like personally very well, but J-Jack up in the Academy Maine was involved in a drunk drive. Not him. Sorry. He was struck by a drunk driver a couple of days ago. J-Jack is, I'm wearing his podcast shirt. Here. I listened to his podcast for years and years prior to us starting the podcast.
He's got all that. And you'll definitely hear us yell it, even in everyday life where it's like everything above the neck is the neck.
Yeah, that's something I got from J-Jack from listening to him talk and listening to his podcast, J-Jack Uncensored, all those years ago. And he has some really, that podcast has some really great stories about kind of early pioneer days in MMA. And J-Jack is one of the, is Amal Easton's first black belt. Like, OG guy. His wife, Amanda Buckner, was a world-ranked strawweight or atomweight. I forget exactly what Amanda fought in. She has some great stories about like Smack Girl and like that era of kind of bare knuckle into Vale Tudo into kind of traditional MMA. So he's gone through a couple of surgeries as a result of that injury and that accident. I think he has a GoFundMe started by some counterparts in the dog training world. He's also a huge part of that. So our thoughts kind of go out to J-Jack. He's been a huge, a big thing that kind of pushed me initially to kind of get together with Josh and start doing a jiu-jitsu related podcast was looking in the enjoyment I had of J-Jack Uncensored kind of all those years ago. We have a very different vein what we do for podcasts, but I got a chance to train with J-Jack probably back in like 2014, dropped in, super friendly. I competed against his guys for years when I was up north. So kind of hearts go out to him, and it sucks when, you know, a member of the community and such a pillar in the area is injured like that.
Yeah, it's a bummer. He didn't set it up again. It was somebody else. It is fully funded, yeah. But, you know, any little bit of any kind of money is helpful. If you look through it, you will see some names. I saw Roxanne Modafari's name on there as somebody that donated. If you can, super awesome. If not, it's okay. So hope everything goes well for him.
Yeah.
And he recovers from all of this. He was listed as serious but non-life-threatening condition. So that is a a bonus, I guess, for that, like, from this tragedy, if you will.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah, but it sucks, especially someone who has kind of had a pretty profound impact in us doing a jiu-jitsu podcast. This sort of is his show. So, yeah. Best of luck. Hope J. Jack recovers fully and everything's great. Real big pillar of the community and real OG of the sport. So, in happier news, I hate this is the worst segue ever. Folks we know that actually my wife is the instructor for their children started a rash guard company, and Rachel and I got some of the rash guards, and they're phenomenal, and I love them. And so we reached out to them, and they went, "Hey, look, if your listeners want a code, they can use code Grapple10, one word, for Silverback Stripes. They make like local rash guards." In the area here in Baltimore, and they're really high quality. They have a nice, anti-ride-up strap at the bottom. The material is really good. They're thick. They're nice, good material. They breathe well. I'm pretty picky when it comes to my rash guards, and these are the type of rash guards that I really like. They feel sturdy. They're comfortable. They fit well. They don't ride up. You can throw them through the wash, and they're not immediately gonna suck and come apart. So really happy that they've decided to kind of reach out to us and give us a code. So if you want or are looking for a new rash guard, they're doing their first run of rash guards now. I got them. They're great. I love them. You can use code Grapple10, and that is Silverback Stripes Athletic Apparel. Again, they're cool little logos. They have a big gorilla on them, and I really like how they feel and look. And so we very rarely, I think, it's been 5 or 6 years since we've done any sort of sponsored thing. We're not getting any kickback on any of this, but
I don't think technically we've done anything.
I think we did the first couple shows. We had a couple here and there. But it's been, again, how infrequently we do this. It also speaks to me really liking the product. I'm really picky about this stuff. And I think they have a really great rash guard that I like to train in. They're going to get their next round is going to have ranked rash guards. Right now they don't have ranked rash guards, but they're going to get those in the future. So you can use code Grapple10 at Silverback Stripes at checkout to get a 10% discount on a rash guard order. I think they're pretty reasonably priced as well. So high quality product that is local to us that we are happy that they're, giving a code out to the listeners of the Grappling Rewind. What else do we have in news?
I think that's it.
Nicky Rod beat 3 people.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a highlight on VHTX. You sent it to me. It was Nicky Rod in a 3-on-1, subbing 3 guys pretty quickly from the back, and everyone went,
that yep, happened.
That is what kind of we expected. I think more match footage will come out. I'm not exactly sure where to watch it, but it happened. It was a bunch of guys that are really not on the level of Nicky Rod. That's why he's going against 3 of them in a row. I think, Josh, you heard some conversation backstage for one of the folks that was going to compete against him the week prior.
One of the guys that did. That
yes.
Lost to one of our teammates.
And they were talking about some of the strategy behind
they
it.
They talk strategy. And
Nicky Rod's hard to beat. So it's not really, again, a guy that almost beat Gordon Ryan.
I heard some strategy of trying to wear somebody down. I don't know the exact rules of it, but I also thought very quickly, it's the wrong person to try to wear down.
Yeah, man, that guy's...
I don't know if you have enough time for that.
No, I don't think I have enough cardio for that. I don't know how... Look at the room he's in. So that happened. Again, hopefully you can find some footage. I may link it on the Grappling Rewind Instagram, Grappling_Rewind, if I find it there. But it's been... I struggled a little bit to find yesterday. You were able to find the highlight, but that's all I've seen from it. That does it for news. Let's move. Do I have anything else? Oh, also, I'm putting out the interviews from the people at Trials. I've been very busy in my professional life this week.
The Jacob Couch one is already out.
You should listen to it. I was able to cut in a bunch of the footage that I was able to get licensed for, or not licensed. I was able to get permission to shoot, which is a first for us to cut those in. So I was really happy with it. Hopefully I'm going to get the rest of them out in the coming week. A little more delayed than I would like, but the Couch one is out, and you can kind of get his thoughts for his training camp and what's going on in his career. And so I really appreciate Couch, as always, giving us the time and access to his career that he always does. And so those are out. You can find those on the Grappling Rewind YouTube page.
I am going to make a suggestion. If you want to see them, don't bother Maine with asking for them, because that's just going to stress him out more and it will take longer. So if you want to see those things, give it a second. Maine's a busy dude. He's also, got a billion other things. You should see some of the stuff he does. But you know, let it happen, and he'll get him out. Yeah, if he says he's going to get him out, he'll get him out. Yep. It might be a little bit, but it's okay. You'll see him. They're nice, you know, shorter interviews, which is also great because you don't have to listen to somebody drone on and ask the same.
I think the longest interview questions. I have is about 3 minutes. I try to keep them real short so that you can get to the information you want and then move on. So, but again, thanks to all the athletes that that gave me their time at trials, and so I will get those out as soon as I possibly can. So you can find them on Grappling Around YouTube page. Also, if you this is exactly where you watch the video show for the podcast. If you've never seen our faces, take a look. Let's move into our recap of ADXC. I keep wanting to call it AJPX.
I mean, it's connected to it. Let's be real. Yeah. It's run roughly by the same people.
They run AJP and UAE JJF and
sort of.
I think it's an ancillary to that in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about this, or do you want to talk about it in general first?
So let's talk about it in general. Let's talk about the things we liked about it first. Talk about the card. Talk about some of the things that we weren't as much of a fan of at the end. I think it's how I would like to do it. They got good names. The production value was pretty good, aside from some of the audio issues in the beginning of the card that were Howell yelling into the mics that he couldn't hear anything.
Howell yelling into the mics and yelling at Braulio because he can't be heard over his microphone. Yelling, can you hear me?
Yeah.
So instead of just like giving him a quick tap on the leg and being like, because obviously we can hear you yelling into the microphone, maybe just like quietly, and then like being like, just some fix the audio.
Just some production stuff. And again, Josh and I have done enough commentary over the years where it's we key into that stuff, and I find it kind of funny because we know how much when you're having an issue in a live event, how much you're just going like, you're trying to fix it as quickly as possible to get back to the broadcast. You're like, I want to have a professional, good-sounding broadcast. And so
you don't want to be yelling.
Howell is a professional, so it's like it got to that point, obviously, that he was doing that. Again, it's their first event. I don't want to bag on an organization bringing this level of talent to their first event. The rule set – let's talk about the rule set now because it is
– bad.
It's bad. It's not great. Not my favorite. it kind of uses the ACBJJ rule set.
It kind of does, and it kind of doesn't. And it doesn't kind of suck. It sucks.
So it's a 3 minute. So they have, for most of the matches, unless they are like co-main or main event, they are three minute rounds. Is it a minute or 30 seconds between rounds?
A minute.
It's a minute between rounds. So you have a 3 minute round, a minute break, a 3 minute round. Like very similar to kind of how wrestling works. But the my first problem with this is that a lot of times when you have the level of talent that you have on the ADXC card, they take a minute to get going. Like, they don't have super aggressive ADCC-style stalling calls yet in that organization, and so you had a lot of feeling out, a lot of time on the feet. I kind of did like that it was in a cage. There were some folks that actually used the cage where I was surprised at their cage craft. I went, I am surprised that you used the cage as well as you did, because a lot of grappling events don't happen in cages, and so if you don't get MMA folks that are coming in, you just get straight like mat grapplers. A lot of times they don't know how to use the cage, and a couple of them I was impressed with their cage work. But 3 minutes is 3 minutes is shorter than even kids matches in the sport that we
do. You could sprint for 3 minutes like jiu-jitsu wise trying to go after it, and nobody really did that.
Usually for matches of this stake, you like to give guys a little bit more time. And so we see it go both different ways. We see certain matches like Gordon matches that are like 30 minutes where it's like, okay, that's on the too long or unlimited time. Those are on the too long side of things. Then you have the matches like this where it's like 3 minutes or like 4 minutes. Like that's just not quite enough time to work. Again, I think we're coming off ADCC trials. I hope more organizations use that, like the 3 and 3. 3 minutes points, no points, 3 minutes points. And if you need it, an immediate 3 minute overtime at maximum in your up to your finals, you have a 9 minute match. That's enough time for folks to really prep and work and drive. And you don't have those breaks in between where you're restarting back up to neutral position where they have to grapple and they have to get back down to the mat to do the mat work, which is primarily sort of what most folks that watch the sport are looking for.
So there's a caveat to that too, is there's no like points technically.
It's kind of the 1FC system with the catches, kind of. It was kind of explained as on broadcast.
At submissions and stuff like that, but like you're. So it happened. Go down so I can just pull up. I can have the names and in my head, I'll figure it out. There it is. Natalie Ribeiro versus Luisa Monteiro. Those two just sold out on footlocks every single round.
It almost looked professional wrestling, kind of.
It did.
Especially at the end,
like,
you had Ribeiro, like, had a kind of
making the faces.
Kind of had a low ankle lock grip and was like booting through, but you kind of tell that the hands were low and they weren't. It wasn't going to break.
She had a nice
Montero's
bite
foot
in like the first round, and she had like kind of a bite in the third round. But if you're watching it and there's no way to make a decision, you even as like somebody that is a seasoned grappling watcher,
like us,
there is no way for us to go, that person specifically won. You're playing a guessing game, and that happened.
Yeah,
on commentary. Yeah. Where they were like, well, I think this person won. And it's like, well, I thought this person won. Well, why? All of this. And it's like, well, it doesn't matter because so-and-so got, like, the armbar attack. And it's like,
the ambiguous criteria is always hard as a viewer to watch because you're left guessing at, like, what is important. And that's really hard as a viewer to figure, okay, especially with the short rounds. It's like, okay, they kind of get into a bit of action, but it's kind of no one has enough time to actually sort of really make their case for the round most of the time. It's like, it's pretty close. They had this moment. When you have a little bit longer time to work, 5 to 6 minutes, you can sort of feel the match ebb and flow and get a better idea of, okay, at the end of that regulation period, this person had the stronger pieces. And you would think that that'd be easier with a shorter match. I find it much harder with a short match like this because they take a little bit to get into it most of the time. And so you're left with only about 40 seconds, almost a third of your match, to judge. And you're like, well, in that period of action, the 40 or so, 50 seconds, who had the better piece? And unless there's something, one thing that's overwhelming, but you're usually only going to have one big moment in a round most of the time. I found it a very hard format to keep straight. And then also one
hard
third
format to keep attention.
Yeah, one third of your, or one even greater than one third of your match is break time between rounds. I found it really difficult to watch.
It messed up the pacing.
Yeah,
a lot. And you're looking at some of these things, and you're just like, huh. And I think there was five submissions.
It was a decent amount of submissions,
No, there was not. Don't lie. There was five submissions out of 14.
Five, which for a high level event is pretty good.
Go back up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. 14 matches. There were 5 submissions.
Yeah.
Right? So you had to sit through 9 minutes of not being 100% sure how or who was going to win to figure out who it was. Let's go into the matches before I can complain more.
All right. Let's start at the top. It was organized, so it's in 4 different videos on XC's website. I think it's only $10.
There's like 7 different ways to watch it, by the way. 7 of them look like sketchy. They're not, surprisingly.
Yeah.
But it was $10, so it's not like, oh, I'm taking a huge hit to my pocket. But if they can find something to like connect with to where it's part of a service, that would be cool. But
the production quality was great. Like I love,
for the most part.
Once they got everything kind of ironed out.
And again, we'll get into it. Some of the things they got to shift. Go ahead.
Let's start them. So here I'm using Just Magazine's results. I like how they organize their results. They are not quite in order of the matches.
I mean, they sort of are.
Are they?
Sort of.
I kept watching between all 4 different videos, so I'm very confused.
Yeah. Either way, the main event was Neiman Gracie submitting Benson Henderson via armbar. Obviously, notoriously hard to submit Benson Henderson.
Yeah.
Got caught.
This was the one where Neiman Gracie, he's on Benson's back. The first round was like Neiman kind of imposing. Second round was a bunch of Neiman on Benson's back. Mm-hmm. And then the third round was more of the same, but there was a really neat transition here. Neiman has a body triangle on Benson Henderson, and then in one motion from the body triangle, slides off the top to the armbar on the back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I watched this a couple of times. This is a pretty neat transition. This is not a transition to go straight from the body triangle to the arm that we see that cleanly very often. I was really impressed with Neiman Gracie's ability to kind of make that slide off. Most people, especially with a guy as not slippery as Benson Henderson, but like it's hard to get a hold of as Benson Henderson. It was interesting to see him have the control on the shoulder and the arm to be able to make that body triangle switch over. Most of the time you see people go for this from the body triangle, it's because they're already sliding off and they don't do it. Neiman Gracie has Benson Henderson in the turtle and then elects to make this switch off to the arm bar. And he doesn't really, I mean, he finishes him. It was just, it's not a transition I see very often. And I was very impressed with his ability to keep his hips on Benson's shoulder.
Yeah.
That was the match.
You covered it pretty much. After or before that, but going down in order, Izaki Behence defeated Gustavo Batista via decision.
This was fun.
It was fun, but I could have seen it differently.
Yeah, this was, I found this one when I watched it was one of the ones where I understand why Behence won, but it was like, I didn't understand the criteria. I watched this and I was like, I don't really understand.
Same thing with lower down, the Fabricio Andre match.
Yeah.
Like, that one I was like, Marcio.
Well, that one's a split. That kind of makes sense, but it's also,
it should not have been, I don't think.
In watching these matches, like, you're waiting for the result, and you're like, oh, he won. I don't really know why he won. Like, I can see it, but he won. As a viewer, I find that really, really hard. And that's, I think, something on the broadcast they can do a better job of. Really well-defined criteria. Because as a viewer, it's okay, now in this rule, because again, it can be whatever rule set you want. Like, if you want to have, like, half guard control be your criteria, like, that's what you were looking for, and that's what wins the matches in your organization, like, let me know that.
Yeah, but
I just wasn't really certain what the criteria, it's like, sort of, it seemed to me it was 1FC's criteria for submission catches, but also some positional dominance.
Yes, but it's like, if your main thing is, like, attacking subs and just aggression, it's like, okay. What does aggression mean?
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, what happens if you pull guard and you're aggressive from there? And you do that every single round. They can't pass your guard. You're trying to sweep the entire time. Does that mean that you won because you were aggressively trying to do those things? It's very, what's the word for it?
Subjective?
There we go. Subjective to who's looking at what.
Yeah. So, this one is very close. I think they both had some good submission attempts. I think Behence had the better submission attempts, I think. One thing I want to bring up here, this was a gi match. So we're going to have some other gi matches in the tournament. I actually really liked what ADXC did here. They taped the belts closed. So for all the matches that were in the gi, and I love that they had a mix of gi and no gi, they had like what looked like colored duct tape around the belt knot. And you brought up on the pre-show, well, the lapels come out, it doesn't matter. Like, no, I don't have to deal with them retying. You tie the belt once, the referee, like gloves, tapes it closed, and then the belt doesn't come off.
But that's besides the point, because if the belt comes off, guess what? It doesn't go back on until in between the rounds.
Yeah.
Thusly, instead of sitting down to take a breather, if you need to, for 3 minutes, you're standing up to then retie it, and that's part of your time. You don't get the break time.
Yeah.
If the belt comes off, the belt comes off.
I liked it. I honestly,
it's fine because it also differentiated between the colors of like the corner where you're like, oh, okay, that's red, that's blue.
They also had like orange tape and blue. They had different colors of tape.
They did it with they probably ran out of red and blue tape.
That makes sense.
They also did it with the rash guards.
Yes.
They had a red and a blue rash guard.
I think that's great. I think more events should do that. Again, athletes don't have their sponsors on the rash guards, but I really like the way it looks for certain events like this where it's very easy to tell.
Yeah.
I would prefer, again, athletes to have their own rash guard and have that individuality, but it does make for a very good-looking product, which I like. I wish more events would take the belt. I think it gives a level of uniformity where it's like, hey, man, you can't do that. It was like, oh, the tie that it just explodes off you as soon as they touch it. If it's a tool that you want to be able to have used in your organization, cool. You tape it up just like gloves. I think you are different.
It would be great for like IBJJF.
Yes. I think I would love to see more organizations.
Because you don't get
the belt comes on, you tape it on.
It would eliminate you have this amount of time to tie it. It doesn't come untied.
Yeah. I haven't
have an issue with it.
I haven't ever seen it before. I really liked it.
I just think like, for these type of matches,
maybe not for these kind of matches,
it's unnecessary.
But it
but
is,
for stuff that if you got a 10-minute black belt match, yeah, because guess what, they ain't retying it. Tuck your gi back in and let's rock and roll.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Next match we had Marvin Vettori defeating Tarek Sulaiman. Dude, I know Vittori's a UFC fighter. I really like watching him fight in the UFC. I was impressed. I'm not really that familiar with Tarek here. I was really impressed with Vittori's wrestling. Like, Vettori put a pace on him the entire time.
He's sort of known for it. He's known for his power, but he was sort of known for his wrestling, too. And that's what they talked about when he fought Izzy. They were like, oh, what about his wrestling? And it's like,
right.
It didn't come into play.
It didn't come into play in that matchup. And in other UFC matches, it has. I was just... in a straight grappling match, and Vittori's done some straight. I think has he been on Polaris before?
Maybe.
I think
I'm not
he
100%
has.
Sure.
We've seen him in grappling matches before, but again, all we talk about on the show pretty frequently. A lot of times, when you have an MMA fighter, especially one at the UFC level, like they are not prioritizing their sport grappling in the same way that traditional, like guys that just grapple are, and so you get a lower level. I was really actually excited for Marvin's match here because he kept a great pace. He kept active. The cage wrestling, I think, looked the best of anyone on the card, but that's obvious because the guy fights in the UFC, so it makes sense that he would have the best cage wrestling of anyone on the card. He put a pace on. He wins the decision here. Again, I think with more time to work, potentially he's able to submit, but really good pathing to the back and overall... Again, I would have loved to see him in a five minute at least. Josh and I think we both don't like the rounds for grappling. It tends to break it up in a way we don't like, and very few people train with the round structure sort of like that. Mm-hmm. But I actually really enjoyed the pace that Marvin Vettori put on. Anything else on this one?
Nope.
Moving on to what I thought the main event was.
That was the main event of the co-main card. Yeah, it was the way they have it listed out when they released all this stuff was really interesting.
They were shirtless. So the main event was shirtless. That's why. Not going to lie, Josh. That's my reasoning. So Roberto Cyborg Abreu defeats Anton Maneko via decision. Dude, Cyborg can wrestle his ass off. You don't become ADCC champion without being able to wrestle your ass off, but you'd figure, like, what, 42, 43, whatever he's kicking up now, like... We bet against Cyborg on the show for like 2 straight years. We're like, oh, he's getting older. And then he won like everything we bet against him on. He won the Kasai. He won the GP. He won a bunch of stuff. I was like, I got to stop betting against Cyborg. He still looks amazing. Like, he looked great. He used the fence way more and way better than I thought he would versus Maneko. And he took Maneko down. Repeatedly, he switched off the single leg. He would lift. He wouldn't really double a whole lot, but like the swing single was there repeatedly throughout this entire match. I was really impressed with Cyborg. I thought he was going to finish Maneko a couple of different times in this match, but the control work was great. And I'm curious if maybe Cyborg is prioritizing more of his wrestling as he gets older, maybe?
I don't know.
Because the footage coming out of that camp, there was a video of him grappling with Achilles that I thought was really cool a couple of weeks ago. It was just them going, it might have been on Wagner's page or but it was a really cool round with them. There was a lot of stand up, and it was Achilles aggressively like shooting and trying to swing single Cyborg like over and over, and then doing some mat work and come back up, and Achilles looking to wrestle up. It gave you a really good dynamic of probably what that room looks like at Fight Sports. And it was nice to see, but I was impressed with the speed and the transitions between the different various takedowns that Cyborg was able to hit here in the matchup. I think this one was very clear to me that Cyborg takes unanimous decision.
Yeah, that one was clear. Like, you're like, oh, okay. But when it's, again, all over the place. And I think some of the people that were on this card should have been in different spots on this card. Like, I would have loved Felipe Andrew to be way higher up on the card.
Let's talk about his match. He was on the prelims.
And we'll go, you know, again, in the quote-unquote main card of this, which is, again, the way they did it was weird. One submission, and it was Marcin Held submitting Gurum. I'm going to murder that. Kuta Taladze.
That was actually correct.
Okay, Kuta Taladze. Solid. he attacked the legs and then went up top, and they were talking about, you know, sometimes you go against the legs to attack the top, and right afterwards he just armbarred him. It's a beautiful armbar. Mm-hmm. It was great. Talking about UFC people fighting. And
he's,
not
he's still in the UFC, right?
I don't know if he's still in there, but he was.
For a long time.
Great submission artist. Again, going to Felipe Andrew versus...
Anderson Ferreira.
I want to say they pronounce it with a V, though.
I know his name on
or
the BJJ...
with a W. It was a W. Anderson,
yeah. Yeah. But so in the BJJ Stars card, they call him Anderson.
Whatever. They were calling him Wanderson with a
Wanderson
W.
Wanderson Ferreira is what they were calling
yeah.
him.
Yeah. Either way, Wanderson started off like a guy that got lit on fire.
And he does. So again, one of the reasons we like, and one of the reasons when we saw him on the BJJ, I think it was BJJ Stars card, we were like, who is this guy? And then he came out guns blazing. We're like, I like this guy. He's aiming. He's just like, he will push a pace on you. And Felipe Andrews, a guy that goes, hey, man, eventually you're going to get in my guard, and I'm going to do what I did to Keenan, do what I did to Hulk.
You.
Do I did to everyone else?
No, but he like pulled guard. Here's the other thing. This match was at 85 kilos. So he took this match and had to cut a stupid amount of weight.
Felipe Andrew.
Yes. 85 kilos.
How many pounds is that?
Give me a second and I'll keep talking and I'll figure it out on my own.
Yeah, Felipe would have had to cut a bunch for this. This was cool though. This is what I think got Felipe Andrew the big notoriety was that big sub and Keenan. Over Keenan in 2020, was like, guys kind of knew who Felipe Andrew was. He was good. He'd been on the circuit for a long time. And then he, like, triangled Keenan out of nowhere.
It's about 180 pounds, by the way.
Jesus.
Which he normally does, like, heavy and super heavy. I'm going to double check my
He's
math.
Normally up a higher weight class.
187. Okay, so I was a little off, but that's okay.
But, it's that same triangle that he hits, that he hit on.
Dude, he snagged.
He hit on Euros.
Like, nah, you're
he
done.
Hit on Hulk. He hit on Third Coast Grappling. It is that standard triangle. He kind of opens his legs wide.
We place that spider guard kind of thing and just kind of zips it through.
And then he yanks you down and drives his hips into your face, and you're stuck.
He just kind of like wiggled it and was like, and now we're in a triangle. And that was that.
It was a crazy good triangle.
I honestly hope that Felipe Andrew stays. I think he would be terrifying as a medium heavyweight competitor instead of at heavyweight or super heavyweight.
I'm curious because he has the speed. And we saw in this match, like if he has that speed, you see him leverage that speed advantage pretty frequently at the heavier weight classes where he's not usually the bigger guy. But he usually is the faster guy and has those flash subs. I'm curious if he's going to have that same advantage at 187 pounds. That's my only concern there.
So, I mean, look at him when... I mean, he lost the match, but look at him when he went against Wardzinski at heavyweight, right?
Well, he's beat Wardzinski before.
Yes. Yeah. But he started to put on a pace. Like, now imagine that same pace and roughly that same strength, but at a lower weight class. So if he goes from heavy, which is like 190-something, I think, to like medium heavy, which is 180-something, which he's gotten to, he could be – that could be like a major game changer in the medium heavy division.
Yeah.
In the gi.
I'm curious
or
to see
no
it.
Or in no gi, honestly.
Again, he has – Felipe Andrew has the best spider guard, butterfly open triangle in the game, and it goes from being open – to just close. He shoots up into you in a way that the guys of that weight class typically don't. Maybe Victor Hugo will a little bit,
but the
speed
that Hugo is not the same speed as.
Well, Hugo's 270 or something or whatever.
He's big.
He's giant. Andrew's almost 100 pounds lighter here, but still is on that bigger guy side of things.
Yeah.
Hits a beautiful sub. Anderson, again, I love the pace that he pushes, but Felipe Andrew's a guy that you make one little error. He'll grab that triangle on you. He's not a guy that you want to spend any amount of time in his guard, and he's going to make you spend time in his guard.
Right.
So.
And then going to the other two subs that were on this whole entire thing, Big Dan Manasoyu, I got it right the second time, defeated Antonio Assef via heel hook, surprising no one. He came over with an overhook and then, like, I want to say it was an Uchimata.
It was like an Uchimata variation.
It, like, Uchied him over and then, like, started to do something and then immediately dropped
into
that. I
was actually impressed. It was a pretty good Uchimata. Like,
yeah, I'm not saying it was bad.
Big Dan is enormous. I saw him for the first time in, like, up, like, chest to chest in person.
He's at 6'7". Yeah, he's big.
Yeah, but like he's a different kind of big. So to see him move in the way he did to step through for that Uchimata, I was pretty impressed because most guys at Big Dan's size do not have that kind of like hop step like he had here. It was a little thing in that transition.
It was up towards the cage though, too.
But I was really impressed with his foot speed for being that big. Most big guys do not have that kind of foot speed. And it was those little things, which, oh, those little X factors for Dan at that size that kind of make you forget, oh, he really is a kind of a freak athlete at that size as
but
well.
But again, look at the room that he's in.
Yeah.
Nicholas Mergali does that kind of shit.
Yep.
Jordan does that kind of shit. You know, you're going to have, who won 88?
Couch?
No. At actual ADCC.
Oh, ADCC. Bodoni. Giancarlo.
Bodoni does that kind of stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not
you're
like
going to pick it up and be able to, yeah.
You're going to pick it up. But again, he moves very well for such a big person.
Oh, yeah.
And then Sarah Galvao.
Well, then he.
He dropped into the heel hook position just the way they fell. He was like, I'm going to take this now.
Yeah.
And
he does. He makes a really interesting transition because he brings his outside leg all the way through like the saddle or like the honey hole. And I watched it a couple of times because he does that up that inverted entry that is kind of in favor right now. But he doesn't like all the way invert through it. He kind of backs out the back of it because he's, again, so big and they're next to the cage. It was interesting to see him use the cage for the takedown. And then also not get trapped on the cage rolling for the sub. Like you could see him make a little of an adjustment there. And I was really impressed with his ability to kind of recognize him next to the cage. A tool that they probably almost never. It would surprise me if Big Dan was doing cage work.
He might have started because.
He might have. But like it would surprise me if it's a thing that's been in his arsenal for a long time. To see him identify the cage, realize it's there, move across, and then not get trapped going for the heel hook on the cage, he gave himself enough space to belly down away from the cage, but still with the cage to his side that he was doing the heel hook. I was just, again, impressed with Big Dan a week after winning the absolute, not absolute, but plus 99, which is essentially the absolute, plus 99 kilograms at East Coast Trials by submission. Again, he gets one here in impressive fashion.
And then Sarah Galvao defeating Vittoria Gabriella via like a modified bow and arrow choke.
Yeah, I was going to say clock, but it wasn't a clock. It was a high. It was like a high bow and arrow.
She didn't have like the leg, but it was the same positioning.
It almost kind of looked like an X choke or zipper choke variation.
I thought that she was losing that match up until that point, honestly. And she used the cage well again.
Yeah.
So good for her. Again,
purple belt now, beating a brown belt. I am curious to see, like, again, Sarah Galvao is Andre Galvao,
his daughter.
Yeah. I think only daughter? Only child?
I think so.
And, like, she's been someone that we've seen come through blue belt. And, like, she is one of the greatest of all time's children. And you always kind of wonder if they're going to follow, like, if they're going to go the Kron route, where it's like, oh, you're going to be a world beater in your own respect, or if they're going to go, you know, plenty of other world champion levels and great grapplers have had children that have never quite got there. And it's been interesting to see Sarah Galvao.
Well, that like, was Kron because he got to black belt and then.
Yeah, but he still did ADCC. He still does magic.
Did he win it? No, he petered out.
Yeah, I think he went to MMA. He chose to kind of follow in his father's footsteps
and what happened,
going to MMA.
And what happened in his last fight?
He got knocked out?
He looked like shit.
Oh, that was the Cub. That was the Cub Swanson. No, that was the
That was the one where he just would like sit down on his butt and not do anything, and then he blamed like his manager or some bullshit like that.
But
it was terrible.
Regardless, my example that I was trying to make is we've been following Sarah Galvao, kind of not on the show because she's been a blue belt and been in the juvenile divisions, but given that she is Andre Galvao's daughter, I'm kind of keeping an eye on them because the Atos camp is notorious for producing both great black belts and great prodigies out of there. And I assume that, you know, under your father and your mother's tutelage coming up, she's been very impressive up to this point. It is nice to see her kind of getting some shine on one of these big cards and opening up the preliminary card for the inaugural event for ADXC and looking good, getting one of five submissions we saw on the card versus a brown belt. Like, I think it's telling. This kind of reminds me of Royal, where Royal used to run every other year for the Worlds, and you'd have some inner belt matchups and inner weight matchups, and I always really liked that about Royal.
Yeah. So all of that, like, it was an all right card.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. One, get rid of that guy in the cage. That announcer, I hated him. I wish, like, his mic broke. It was bad. He announces the person as they come in and then announces the same exact thing again when they're in there. No need for that. Put up a graphic. Who's coming in? Great. Have the people talking over. Same thing like UFC. Here they come in. Boom. Then you can announce, oh, here's Bob. Here's Steve. End of story. Done. Stop trying to put flair on it. I don't care about who's sponsoring all these things. We know it's coming from the royal family. We're aware. We know where all this money and stuff is coming from.
They keep cutting to the crowd.
We get it. Don't need that. These 3-minute rounds, terrible. Let us know how you score this, because yeah, I still don't know.
It was a bit confusing.
That was bad. If you're going to build up a prelim card into like a main event to create hype, make them uneven. Like, make it uneven.
I was actually happy with the matchmaking.
Like, I wasn't. It wasn't bad, but you know, make it so. Especially as your inaugural event, let's try to go for like at least 50% submission rate, right?
Yeah, I think again that's with the shorter round. It's super hard because yeah, you only have to, essentially, imagine if you don't have 3 rounds. Every match is its own match because there's a break between you restart standing. How often
just
at the black belt level?
One round, 9 minutes.
How often at the black belt level do you see a sub in the first 3 minutes?
Hardly ever.
Uncommon.
But again, some of them did that.
Yes.
But
other matches on the card that I want to talk about because you missed some of the results. Jonathan Gracie defeated Nathan Chung via decision.
Shuang
via decision. Luisa Montero defeated Natalie Ribeiro via
about that a little bit.
Decision. Talison Suarez defeated Ziad Akhtakili. Akhtateri.
So one was a hyped up one just for the fact that Ziad won the AJP Worlds. And so they're like, this guy is.
And Ziad's good. Like, we know Ziad's good. He's very good. Yeah.
But it's like, you're going against Talison. Like,
yeah.
Come on, that's going to be a hard one to go against. Again, mm-hmm, we talked about Fabricio Andre versus Marcio Andre.
Fabricio Andre won that via split decision.
I don't agree with that at all. Yeah. And I've been like super high on Fabricio, but I don't think he won.
This was one where it's at all. This is one based on my understanding. I was like, I can see it, but it was also, I don't really like it's. I don't have defined criteria, so I don't really know.
You can't make it like even an educated guess because you're not 100% sure. You're right, basing it off of previous experience, but yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
It's such a wildly different rule set. So
Tiani Porfirio came back. We haven't seen her in forever.
Where was that? I missed her. Right, she was main card at the beginning of main card. Defeated Giovanna Jara. I think she's beaten her a number of times.
Yo, Tiani looked good.
Yeah.
We have not seen her in years.
And, we've seen her off and on occasionally.
We've seen her like pop out. We haven't really seen her compete. She is in amazing shape.
Yeah. This is the best shape that I've seen her in.
If anybody remembers, not that she was bad at jiu-jitsu, she was bigger, but she could still move and groove. Mm-hmm. You would still see her invert, but she was like, a lot of people talked about her being like the second coming of Gabby Garcia.
Yeah.
Right? She's in amazing shape. She looked great. Like, good on her. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see her back in like the IBJJF circuit. I'd love to see her in a bunch of other things as well.
This is one of the matches where the first 3 minutes was kind of like, we could have almost done away with that first round. It was like a lot of pushing back and forth. Nothing really happened. In the second match, I appreciated, and the commentary picked up on this, Tiani immediately pulled guard and started playing some guard work, but it was one of those, you could have just not had that break in the first round. You could have just had referee, again, coming off of East Coast Trials and doing so much ADCC recently, I am so used to organizations like being active in the athlete's ear, like action, 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 calling for it, that when I don't see that in other organizations at the frequency I'm used to seeing at ADCC, it's odd now, and I'm going, oh, that's the way to get the type of matches that you want, a little shorter, maybe not this short. But
you can also say action, 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 and there's action, you're just trying to be like, go even faster and possibly make a mistake, because watching even the trials going back, like, I mean, Rob.
Yeah.
and this was in the open, not mm-hmm. even in the actual trials itself. I'm watching it. The guy's like, action. I'm like, dog, he just passed his guard, and now you're yelling action at him? And it's like...
But I like that. I
get the sense of urgency, and you want the submission, but there's a fine line between like trying to force something that is not 100% going to happen.
Yeah, I understand
that.
And
like trying to cause something, and you know, when it comes to the trials, it's like you're yelling action at these dudes. Every single one of these people, no matter who it is, whether they went out in the first round or they went out and lost the finals, like this is going to put an unknown number of money in their pocket afterwards. Because you can just be like, all right, trials winner, I'm at ADCC. Like you can live off the seminars from that alone. And you're like, threaten your livelihood because I don't feel that you're moving enough. Yeah. And I saw plenty of times where I'm like, nothing is going on right here and nobody's saying anything.
Yeah, I just like, I like the action calls because it makes...
I think they need to be warranted. Like if you're just chilling, if I pass your guard and I'm just trying to hold you down and somebody's yelling action at me, understandable. If I pass the guard and you're telling me action as I pass the guard,
I'm
going to pop my head up and call you an asshole.
I think that's the correct thing to do. It's like, hey, you've done the work. Now continue to move forward.
And you can say continue working.
Yeah.
But you can't say like action. Well, the action
from the referee call is just an incentive to push the athlete. The action warnings from the judge are different. And
you also have more insight to that than I do because you've done the rules course. You've been a ref
judged for it.
Like, so you have that experience. And granted, I have probably more referee experience.
I think that's very reasonable. Yeah.
But mine's in a different rule set than yours.
Right.
So it varies. Like, I get it. And you do want to see that pace because nobody wants to watch. And that is a big thing with people shitting on the IBJJF or anything. It's like nobody wants to watch stuff in the gi or this because they're just holding.
Right.
And I get that. But sometimes, like, that 66-kilogram final in the trials, that shit was fire.
Yes.
That made me tired watching it.
Yeah, I was mat side. Exhausting.
Exhausting. But there are going to be times, too, especially, like, some of the plus 99 or minus 99 matches, like, they were slow. I'm like, where's the action calls then?
Yeah.
Like,
I like...
It's very subjective. I like it, but I think it needs to be directed better.
That's reasonable. And make
in a sense. Not like, oh, don't call action at all.
Right.
But it's like, okay, you pass.
I would much rather have more calls for action. All right, guys, good work. Keep working. Yeah.
Like, keep working is good. That's fine. If I pass, I'm going to take about 10, 15 seconds. If I pass, I'm going to hold for a second. I'm going to go, okay, where are we going from here? Unless you're trying to book it out of there. Yeah. Then I got to keep working. I'm going to take 10 seconds. If I got 6 minutes, give me 10 seconds.
Yeah. And that's where I think I like where the sport is going, where it's like, hey, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't want to give you those time. I want you to continue like to plan and not have these places where you're stopping waiting. Like I want you to be ready to go and prepared to continue to progress when you get there. Because I think it will take a long time to change the sort of framework of how we train the sport. And I think that's what we're starting to see. I would like more organizations, again, like ADXC, to have that, especially if you're going to have the shorter rounds.
So again, the counterpoint to that is you keep yelling action. I want to make sure I get my points too.
Yeah.
Because it's not the referee on the mat giving the points.
Yeah, it's
the judges at the table.
Yeah.
So I don't know when they're scoring yet until I hear, hey, you got your two, you got your three, you got your four, you got your whatever. Like, I'm going to make sure I get my points first.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
And if you're yelling at me action and I haven't even gotten my points yet and I start to go something and I don't get my points and now I'm in a back and half guard or whatever, fuck you.
Yeah, that's reasonable. So, again, I liked the matchups on
the
card.
They can make it better.
That we've talked about for years, and it was sort of one of the problems with ACBJJ. I don't think the rounds for jiu-jitsu are good. I think it is a bad format for submission grappling when you need so much time on the mat.
Do it like Sug. Sug did it in the cage, but it was one round.
Well, I think do it like ADCC. do it like ADCC.
Or do it like that, to like, where you can say there are points now, and it's it's not like there's a shortage of referees, right?
Yeah, I just like, again, I the more I work with ADCC, and this is probably a huge bias on my end coming through, but the amount of matches that I have seen in the last year for ADCC, the amount of boring matches I have seen for ADCC is very few.
Very little. But, I mean, you can put it
it's a format that works really well.
And a lot of people and gyms are training that way now to where it's like, all right, 6 minutes. It's like, go. Yeah. And you'll have somebody in the room yelling, points, and you know, okay, now I really got a book. And I'll use the opposite side of that as EBI. It's like, you have one guy that is the action. That is beating the brakes off of the other person, but couldn't finish and then loses in the overtime. And that's, again, that's my issue with that specific type of overtime, not the here you have 3 minutes, points are on the board,
right?
Go. I mean, we can argue and talk this kind of stuff ad nauseum.
This is episode 310 of a long series of Josh and I discussing what we like and don't like about rules. We've done, during COVID, we did episodes on just us discussing different rule sets.
I almost forgot about that.
Yeah, back in the day. So this is a very common point, again, with new rule sets, with new organizations, especially ones that are putting the money and putting the resources, getting the athletes there.
Make that shit better.
I want to see improvements, because I think this would have been one of the top cards of the year had the format been changed a little bit, because you had a bunch of, you know,
3 3-minute rounds, super high level,
super, and then the main events were three 5-minute rounds. Sorry, 5 3-minute rounds, which I just don't
think
is enough
time to work. That's more 3-minute rounds. It's
Yeah. So that's it. That does it for ADXC. Again, we had Fight to Win this weekend as well. We had Laura Halleck defeating Roberta Crush via decision. Pretty dominant match through and through. Laura working for subs, almost getting close right at the end. Didn't have the time to finish. They are in Columbus, Ohio. We're going to have them in Baltimore. They were. We're going to have them in Baltimore this next week. We don't have a card this week. Saturday. Some folks that we train with are probably going to be on the card. We don't have matchups yet. You may hear us if you watch the event. We're not quite sure yet, but look out for that. In 2 weeks, we have Polaris Pro. We have the return of Craig Jones taking on Gerald Mearshart. I think, is he still in the UFC?
I don't know, but Craig wins.
I think Craig will win that.
We don't have to have a conversation about that. Craig
Molly
wins.
McCann's on the card. We have UK trials winner Owen Jones versus Doubleman on the card. We have Kendall versus Maya Cardoza, which I'm actually really excited. Kendall still has the strap for Polaris.
Cardoza looks good. Is this the first time she's competed?
Since ADCC, since the injury? It might be.
She might have a little mat rust. I mean, she's been training, obviously. She's been training. Had to have been training. But, like, competition-wise, might have a little rust.
And Cardoza is no joke, so I'm excited about that. We'll talk about that more next week. Also, we have Tommy Langacker versus Oliver Taza.
That one's going to be fire. That could have happened at trials, but it didn't happen because...
It's going to be fire because Owen Jones... Joseph Chen
was like, I'm just going to beat everybody.
Beat them both.
Which was awesome. So it'll be cool to watch that match. It'll be interesting to see what happens in general.
So those are the big matchups that are announced. Well, again, we'll preview those next week. We also have a bunch of fun prelim matches. Again, Polaris has been killing it in the UK and in Europe. I love that they're just pumping out stuff.
They're like, we're going to just do something once a month. And I'm like, dude, sick.
That open weight card that they ran with
was fire.
That was one of the best brackets of the year so far. And that's saying a lot. It's been a good year.
I told you Kynan would win it.
He did win it, but I didn't expect Fabricio Andre versus Giancarlo Bodoni, then Fabricio Andre versus Kynan, and it to be a fun match. It wasn't just Kynan putting the smack down. Like, it was a little back and forth there we didn't expect.
Fabricio looked great that entire tournament.
Like, that, I think, is one of the best performances of the entire year, and we just had trials, so that says a lot. So
have Brazilian trials happened yet?
They have not happened yet, John.
Okay, so they're coming down the line. I'm expecting to see Fabricio, and it'll also be super interesting to see which weight he goes, because now he's not part of Melky Gal's team. So again...
Really?
No, he left a little while ago. Remember when we were talking about that, and he came out as Alliance? He came out as Alliance during the GP.
I remember that, yes. Okay.
So it'll be interesting because I think he lost to Baby Shark at one of the trials. And then That's the one that he. That's the one that Baby Shark won, but then he won the second Brazilian trials. So I'm very interested to see.
Brazilian trials are still like wonky. South American trials are still kind of wonky. Brazilian trials. It's just like the U.S. trials. Like it's usually
North American trials.
It's the location the trials are typically in, except for the European trials, which are usually in Poland and Kazakhstan. Yeah, I'm curious to see. I think he'll go 77.
Maybe.
He might make the cut down to 66. A lot of those guys will for trials, especially with day before weigh-ins now.
But again, like, no, if you're – so if you're doing South American trials, you know who else is going to be in 77? Mika Galvão.
Nah, he'll get – he's second. He gets an invite back.
But he might not – who knows?
He will. Trials. So first four get invites back.
Okay. But again, like there's all these.
You never know.
There's all these people in this, and who knows who's going into these divisions. So you don't know where they're going. You don't see where they're going to run into whomever. So it all varies as well.
So it'll be fun. Looking forward to that. And then we also have this weekend. We have Toro Cup. The whole card's out
Bring
for Toro
whole
Cup.
Thing you, up just because it's.
I don't have it.
You had the flow grappling thing up. I mean. You just had each thing listed. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, those are the big things for this month, remaining in this month.
Right.
But mainly,
Sogi also has all of that stuff. Is the same day.
Yeah, Toro Cup 27 is October 28th. Fight to Win up here in Baltimore is October 28th, and Sogi,
the 28th,
the lightweights is the 28th, and then the Florida Open is November 4th, and then Zach and I are doing commentary at Copa. Virginia, November 4th.
Oh, on the 4th.
And then February, we're doing another one for Copa Elite 3. Mm. So, yeah, we got some good stuff coming down the pipe. Anything else you got going on this week? I'm about to go to a business trip as soon as we leave this episode.
No, just more training.
Yep. So, yeah, it'll be fun. We get to train together, hopefully next week. So, I'll be excited for it. Josh, anything else?
Nope.
All right, as always on the show, I'm your host, Maine, my co-host,
Josh.
And we have the grappling rounds, and that, whatever it is, stay safe. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google+.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.